accession number 16848, drill 4.
Mr. Cornish, reel 4.
So that accent, okay. The accent wasn't quite Russian. It was, they spoke beautiful Russian, obviously, but it wasn't, there was something in the accent which wasn't quite Russian. So that's the first thing which I've noticed then. Well, they complimented me on my Russian, which must have been good at the time. And eventually the story unfolded, you know, they asked me where I was born, you know, Poland and this, and what was the life there like, and so I told them the story of my life. They were very interested, you know, about my family, the situation in Poland, the political situation, and sort of transpired that, you know, they were under occupation and we in Poland were under occupation. Well, it wasn't the exact parallel, but but there it was. And towards the end of the journey, the last day, I told them everything. I told them that, you know, I've been in the labor camp and I'm trying to join the Polish army, which is being formed here. And that was quite near to the city of Tashkent already. And that's where we left them. We were almost friends by then. They took care of me. There was also a hairy moment once when the NKW boarded the train in one of the stations, and the major noticed that I was very, very afraid of what might happen. And they saved my life probably by that. Maybe they did, maybe didn't, I don't know. They told me to go on the top shelf, and the major put his coat over me. And they stopped by the door, and Colonel stood in the doorway, and they asked him who that person was on the top. Said, it's the major went out. Actually, he said, well, it's major, he's not feeling very well, so he's having a sleep, don't disturb him. And they went on. They could have pushed the, you know, customer aside and said, I want to have a look, I want to see him. They didn't. My luck. Then in Tashkent, I joined another train going to a city, to a place called Kuzar, where they were forming units. I knew that already then, that they were forming certain units there. So I arrived at Kuzar, I sold my coat to an Uzbeki woman, because it was warm, it was very warm there already, and I stayed there with her, paying her rent for a few days until after I found a place where I could join the army. So I joined the army there. There were no Russians at the time. And that's how I became a Polish soldier.
What was the name of the place where you joined the Anders army?
Guzar.
Guzar?
Guzar, yeah. Guzar.
What state were the Anders army in at Guzar?
Organization, beginnings of formation of units. There was an officer school there, to which I was eventually sent. It was a death town. Thousands of people died there. It was a very, very unhealthy place. Rations were very short. The water was dirty. There were lice on us. Typhus, typhoid, or sort of oriental illnesses, with funny names. And virtually thousands of people died there. You know, there were transports of dead. every day, every night. It was really pathetic. Now, as far as I'm concerned, I was eventually given, I was told to join this officer school, and I was on the way there, walking. And then I remember along the side of the road, a machete. You know what machete is? No, it's
building.
No, it's a church. It's not church.
Mosque.
A mosque. That's it. And that's all I remember. I dropped there on my face, unconscious. I had typhus then, the typhus fever, you know. And the next time I woke up was on the floor of that mosque, among hundreds of other people lying on the floor.
What was the matter with the others?
I don't know. I was conscious for a couple of minutes, perhaps, there. And the next time I woke up was in the hospital. It was a Russian civilian hospital. There were only 4 beds occupied. There was a doctor, a woman doctor, and 4 nurses there. And I stayed there for 5 weeks, recuperating. It was a terrible illness. You just lying unconscious for days on end, very high temperature. Some people survived, most of them died. That I survived. To the extent I was in better condition leaving the hospital than ever before, but they taking good care of us, the girls. Why the Russian hospital? Why me? Among hundreds on the floor, why me? I don't know to this day. Sorry. So you know this was a, and after that after the hospital, joined the unit and officer school. Terrible conditions at the beginning. Eventually we've left Russia, of course, we moved to Iran.
What was your
Persia then?
What was your journey to Iran like?
Well, first of all, we had to march a long way to get to the port. Krasnovodsk, yeah, the port. And the ship was small. Well, it wasn't that small, but there was only standing room there on it, and no food. So it was a nightmare of a journey. No lavatories. A lot of people were very, very sick. And when we arrived in Pakhlevi, a port on the Persia coast, it was like arriving in Eden. There were obviously British Army there already, and tents and food and white bread, eggs. Miracle.
What was life like for the Persian civilians as compared with the Soviet civilians?
Oh, it was no comparison. There were free people, virtually, you know, as far as freedom goes. I know it was dictatorship, but it didn't affect us. not. You know, on the contrary, we were very well received by Shah. as Poles, generally speaking, there were camps everywhere in Tehran and in the countryside, and very well looked after.
If we could just stop here, if I could ask you a general question about what you thought of the communist system in the USSR after your experience of having lived there for a few years.
Well, the communist system was completely foreign to our way of thinking. The rules and regulations were grotesque by Western standards. Obviously, the efficiency was so low. Everything was, you did not exist as a thinking person, really. You were doing what you were told to do. The authorities said, the rule was, we are the thinkers, you are the doers. And everybody relied on instructions to do their bit in the environment or whatever. Everybody had their role to play. You had to be very careful what you were saying, because the system relied on spying on each other.
Can you give an example of the spying on each other?
Well, you say you lived in a building, and the concierge there had a specific role to play. He had to inform on everyone living in that building, on every item of the daily life, significant or otherwise. It was not up to him to make the conclusions. Conclusions were drawn by somebody else. My father was a candidate for the Russian exile, being a director of very wealthy sort of a enterprise, he had the foresight of leaving that place in Skornica, which is place near Carpathian Mountains, and arrive in Lvov before the occupation started. And he camouflaged himself as a as a worker in the welfare system. And he wasn't found out. Otherwise, he would have been deported together with all of us.
Jumping ahead, when you got to Britain, did you ever try to tell British people about your first-hand knowledge of what it was like in Russia?
Yes. To start with, we did try that during the 2 years of resettlement. Be a member of a resettlement corps, which was formed when we arrived in this country. We had various meetings with British organizations, people who were curious, and they invited us to talk about ourselves. And frankly, I have seen and I've noticed that they simply did not believe us, what we were saying. One funny incident, when I told about Russians deporting people and what they did, so they arrived at somebody's home, knocked the door down, and gave him half an hour to pack. Well, the young lady said, if it was up to me, I wouldn't let them in. Well, fine. No, she wouldn't let them in. They did not could not understand, because I didn't blame anyone for not understanding, because they were never exposed to situations like that. They were not exposed to utter barbarism. So eventually, you know, it was a question of perhaps discussing things with someone, but it was always this sort of a background, not believing your story. You know, it's a nice story to tell. Are they really like that? Oh, well, I see.
So did you eventually stop?
We stopped, yeah. You know, when I studied here at the university for my degree, of course it was a different story, because you were among the people at a certain level, a different level. So there was no question of anyone ridiculing you for having talking about things like that. But even then, it was not quite the thing to do, you know, to try to tell you how bad the Russians were.
Why should it not be fitting at university?
Well, because at the time the Russians, they were in the vogue, you know, they were their allies. You don't tell, you know, bad things about your allies.
Which years were you at the university?
It was 1950 to 1954.
Which university was this?
Leeds.